From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk about love as we celebrate Valentine's Day. Heart emoji, heart emoji, heart emoji. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me as they do, of course, each week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hey guys, Valentine's Day, love is in the air, and I'm excited that we will probably talk a little bit about that. But there's something I wanted to bring up first, and I'm pretty excited about it because this has come up in various TV shows, strangely, over the past decade or so. I think I remember seeing it in Ted Lasso and a couple of other things. But over the weekend were the opening ceremonies for the Olympics, the Winter Olympics there in Italy. And this song was played during the opening ceremonies. And I was pretty mad because the American announcers didn't really say anything at all about it. But I want you guys to listen to this. And I'm going to let it run for a little while because I want you to hear what's going on here, and then I want to talk to you about it.
Freezing cold in ancient 9 years old.
You're the cold maids say one. Freezing cold in ancient 9 years old. All right.
When I stand the shoes and I will hold the scene, then a whole rape maybe get the color boss dying.
I love it. We know it.
Okay, great.
It's a great song, actually.
Yeah, it's super catchy, right?
Have you seen the video?
I have, yes, when I have.
I love that video. Oddly enough, I occasionally put it on myself just to enjoy it so much.
Yeah.
And I think we should tell our listeners, he's an Italian singer.
Uh-huh.
Who basically fakes English. It's not English.
Right.
But it sounds exactly like English.
Yeah.
I got this sent to me by a lot of people, actually, way back when we first started doing this. People were like, this is so up your alley. And the thing that got me is the first time I heard it, I hear word. I heard it's cold in Mancuso. something about 99 twos. You know, and so you start going like, there must be sense. There must be sense.
Isn't it magical?
It is.
I looked him up after, I think someone sent it to me too, and I looked him up and I thought, this guy deserves to be famous.
Yeah.
And he was very successful. Very successful singer, and I think he deserves every bit of that success. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also interesting, though, how the cadence really, he really gets English.
Yes.
It's really interesting in that.
Absolutely. So his name is Adriano Celentano. The song, I'll try to say, Prison Call in Ensign Chusel. It's from like the early 70s. And yeah, so everything you said is right. His idea, apparently, behind making the song was to approximate what it sounds like for a non-English speaker to listen to English rock music.
Mm-hmm.
And so
it's perfect.
Yeah, it is, because you can almost get there, right? It's just so close to being understandable.
That's what got me, because I felt my poor little brain is going like, okay, it's cold in Mancuso. Then I was like, no, because the second line, he says that again in a couple lines, and it's not cold. Then it's like, it's a whole something, you know?
Although, to be really fair, speaking as an English speaker, a lot of rock songs I listen to with the same degree not understanding a thing they're saying. And it's funny because now they're putting, you know, now that they put lyrics a lot of times underneath this, when you look at a video of a rock song, a lot of times I've been really surprised. I'm looking like, I never knew that was what it was about.
Right.
Yeah.
And these are songs I listen to like 1,000 times or something. I love it. I'm really glad you put that. We could have the whole show just listening to that.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
So good.
But I'd have to be able to dance.
Nothing's stopping
keeping you, Kathy.
I don't know if the people that watch us would like it, but hey.
Yeah, well, anyway, I heard that over the weekend. I got super excited. I had to bring it up.
I'm glad you did.
All right. So today, I guess as this episode is coming out, it will be Valentine's Day. So if you're listening on the day that this is released, then happy Valentine's Day. Did you guys want to talk about some love words today?
We did, but we're going to start with one of the most romantic words of all.
Mm-hmm.
It was an email from our listener, New York Tim, as he calls himself.
As we called him, and now he calls himself, yeah.
Yes. Suggesting we do an episode about the romantic thing, the schwa.
Oh, yes.
The schwa. Yes. And he said we should do an entire episode on it, which we think is a great idea. So this is just a placeholder, because when Ross and I started talking about this, we both thought we had a question. Why schwa?
I have always wondered that, yeah.
And one thing I want to add is, because we had, Kath and I both were in school, they had a big thing for some reason at Ridgewood Junior Elementary School on the schwa sound. And typical kid, Kathy and I both thought, like, why are they calling it the schwa? And a typical kid, they always talk about how curious kids are. Typically, we said, we have no idea. And that was it. And every years, we wondered.
It's a schwa. Let's talk the schwa.
So anyway, Fletcher, do you know why it's called the schwa?
I have also always wondered why it's called a schwa, and also why it's called a schwa instead of a schwa.
That's
a good
point.
If you're going to do it, shouldn't it sound more like it? Yeah.
Should we say what the schwa is? Should we say what this is before we, just for people who might
not
know?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Why don't you enlighten everyone on that one, Fletcher?
It's sort of the sound, right? Like when people say the state Oregon, right? Oregon. That's the schwa instead of Oregon, which some people say.
Right, which some people say.
Exactly.
And it's an upside down E. Well,
yeah, like if you see it, if you see it written out, it would be an upside down E.
When they do it as pronunciation. And it was entered English from the German schwa in 1895. It entered the philological.
Kathy, wait, one second. It's not German. It's a Hebrew word.
Well, I was going to go into the thing. It came, we got it in English from the German.
Yes.
But I was going to go down here and talk about that. But why don't you do that now?
I got concerned you were saying from the German. I got, oh no, she made a mistake. No, it's actually from a Hebrew a letter or shva, which actually indicates, it's like a little mark that indicates don't emphasize this vowel.
Oh.
So basically, otherwise you'd pronounce it really strongly, like you just said Oregon.
Uh-huh.
But the schwa, little schwa symbol basically says, hey, buddy, don't pronounce it that way.
Back off.
Pronounce it really softly. Yeah, back off. It's Oregon.
Huh.
And that's why ancient Hebrews always pronounced Oregon. We now know
that's
that.
Right. Yes. Hey.
So then we got curious because it's the whole thing. I mean, it's usually a mid-central vowel, et cetera, et cetera. So then we started saying, where'd vowel come from?
Vowel?
Ross and I are fascinating people, Fletcher. Conversations we have.
Actually, to be really fair, Kathy, a couple of times we've done that where, like, you can see glazed eyes.
Luckily, my friends still love me, as does my husband. Or so they say. I don't know.
Actually, I think, Fletcher, you could probably guess this one. Vowel. Let's think of cognates in English, words that sound sort of...
Sound like vowel, foul, trowel, vocal.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a vowel, something that's voiced.
Yes. Very good. It comes from that idea. But let's try to guess what language, Fletcher. Just take a wild guess.
And at this point, I think we'll just let Ross talk.
Yeah, so Latin, I guess.
Shocking.
Yeah, it comes from vocalis in Latin, vocal letter. The idea was that you're sounding out the letter. I don't quite see why you sound out consonants too, but and that comes from vox or vox, voice, which is Latin as well.
Okay.
Which came back
from the Proto-Indo-European.
Yes.
Weque.
Yeah. You're so fluent. Kathy is so fluent in Proto-Indo-European.
Put me on a step and I'd be chatting away with the whole gang. So there we have schwa and vowel.
Interesting. Yep. So you've got your vowel, the voiced thing, and you've got your schwa, which is the sort of back off your voice. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Huh. But now we're going to be vocal about something else, about Valentine's Day and
love words. Just say that love vowel, if you move the letters around and remove the W, spells love.
Oh, yes. Oh, how about that?
If you wow. That, but you have to remove the vowel. I mean, the W.
The W. So. Because it's about you and not you, but me.
Well said, Kathy.
Time. Well, we're going to not start with love, though. We're going to start with Valentine, obviously.
Yep.
And we know Valentine's Day came from St. Valentine. I think you know all about St. Valentine, right?
All about?
Both of you?
All about? I think I wouldn't go so far as to say I know all about St. Valentine, no.
Well, actually, there are probably three up to, they say two, but now they say, I mean, they also say up to three St. Valentines.
Oh.
There were a bunch of saints who were called St. Valentine, and there are all sorts of, you know, mysteries about who is what. He's not even mentioned in the earlier Christian, you know, hagiographies. He's mentioned a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, Kath, I have a question for you, Catherine.
Yes.
Do you know St. Valentine's Day date in Greece?
I do not.
Okay, July 6th.
July 6th.
Which is a drag.
July is a good love day. It seems too sticky.
They don't celebrate it that way anyway. But I don't think it's a good day either. I agree with you.
No, I'm
I
not
like
really
it better
fond
now.
Of it.
Yeah.
I just want to say though that the Saint Valentine. Usually, most people say that Valentine's Day came from the bishop Saint Valentine, who was imprisoned, and there's a bunch of different theories actually, mm-hmm. but that tends to be the one that is usually accepted, even though it possibly isn't true. But it was a bishop who was martyred and was commemorated by the church on Feb 14th.
How did that then move into everybody loves each other?
There's actually there's one mystery about this whole thing, which I don't even believe. I think it's an after the fact thing. But one group of people say that he actually, before he was actually marrying Roman soldiers, and that the emperor got mad at him.
Wait a second, not personally.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. Okay. Good point. Yeah. Yeah. He was presiding over marriage ceremonies, you know, giving them Christian marriages. Good point, Kathy. Serial marrier. Yeah. And the emperor got teed off because Roman soldiers shouldn't be married because they should be busy fighting. And then there's one theory, which I think is bizarre. They said that he would cut out hearts out of like vellum or and give it to people as like a symbol of love.
That
I think
sounds
that's
silly.
Right. Yeah. I don't believe
that. And then there's the one where he did letters for someone, I thought, and would sign them Valentine. It was love letters to like a jailer's wife, daughter or something.
Yeah.
That's another one.
Yeah.
They all seem
a little fishy, yeah.
Yeah.
So somehow we got here.
Yep. The one interesting thing that people don't really realize is Valentine comes from the Latin valens, which means strong, vigorous, tough, which is sort of a weird thing because you associate him more with gentleness and love, but the name is...
Well, it could be like a manly man.
Manly love.
I don't know. But there was also the theory, you saw that, Ross, didn't you? It was just so nonsensical that they were trying to do it with Lupercalia or something, which is very...
A Roman holiday. And then there's also links trying to link him to Cupid. Basically, I think Kathy and I are coming down to the thing that no one really has any idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the 14th century, you picked your sweetheart on Valentine's Day, on Feb 14th, and it just kept growing. And now it's commercialized and you buy cheap chocolate. Or expensive chocolate, as the case may be. But now our question is not about Valentine qua Valentine, but... We got the St. Valentine's and now be my Valentine, Valentine card, all this stuff from this one saint. Can you think of any other saint names whose names have become part of the English language and used, perhaps not a ton, but we're aware of them, but we've pretty much forgotten who the saints really were and what they did.
Like, so separate from the saints. So like we have our Valentines that we give each other, but we don't necessarily think about Saint Valentine.
We don't think of saints.
So we're not talking about like Saint Patrick, because that's still related to the saints. Okay.
Before you do that, I was going to add one thing. It surprised both Kathy and me. There weren't that many. I basically thought because there's such a basic part of Western heritage, they'd be all over English, and they're not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh boy, I feel like it's going to be totally obvious once you tell me. Oh, nothing's just popping right into my head.
They're not.
Oh, they're not.
They're not going to.
Oh, no. Oh, okay. Oh, good.
Two I would never have thought of. Oh, two I might have.
Fascinating. Okay. Well, let's get started. I none are coming to mind right now.
We'll give you a clue. Arf, arf.
That's what I was going to do.
Oh, like a Saint Bernard.
Yes,
was
good.
That a little, what was that? Was that like a little barrel full of hot chocolate on your neck, Kathy? That you,
isn't that what, it was brandy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that works.
Actually, that's another clue. Kathy just gave another clue. We didn't put this in our list, but I just thought of that one.
Saint Brandy?
No.
Kathy's patron saint.
No, that's another clue, though. You might put this in your in the little barrel.
Oh.
It's sort of dubious, this one.
Are you doing this one, Ross? You wouldn't put that in the barrel.
No. Oh. Kathy was going to say St. John's Wort.
St. John's Wort.
No. Goodness. I was like, it's a plant. It gives you an herb. No. Although this does have herbs in it.
Tea. St. Tea. Saint T.
Saint, a little higher octane.
Saint Earl Grey. Saint Earl Grey.
Yeah, no, higher octane than that.
Oh, higher octane. And it has leaves in it?
Well, it has like herbs in it.
Herbs. So do we have like some kind of liqueur here?
Yeah.
Yes.
This is really dubious. Kathy just typed in, that's not really, really good. So I'm going to tell you, it's Benedictine
oh, sure.
to drink.
Of course, because Benedict.
St. Benedict. Yeah. And St. Benedict gave his name to Benedictine monasteries. And mm-hmm. then one of the guys who invented Benedictine said, hey, let's link it to a monastery. So it became Benedictine.
Yeah.
So it is sort of dubious. Kathleen, do you want to tell? You want to tell? I was gonna say.
I'll
you
try
tell
to act
Elmo
out
the
next
other two.
One.
I just don't know why I said it. Yeah, Kathy's acting it out.
What?
Well, I could act out either of them because, like, if Saint
Elmo.
Okay, you know. Yeah,
Saint Elmo's fire. Kath just gave it up. Yeah. And then the other one is
Saint Vitus's dance.
They were both intended Saint Vitus's dance.
Yeah. That's why you and I know them. You're right.
I just realized that. We Kath and I
because I know
loved,
those. I was like, oh yeah.
We love Tintin, the comic comic books Tintin. And Saint Elmo's Fire, and I think Saint Vitus's Dance were both in one of those
yes,
books.
Yes, because I think someone said that Captain Haddock was gonna get Saint Vitus's Dance if he was out in the something.
And he got St. Elmo's fire when he was climbing.
Yes. Because of the pick on his back.
Yes, exactly. He was climbing.
See, this is another thing. Now, do you want to know where Val came from? Oh!
Well, you know another, as you're saying all of this, another one that has sort of separated from the saint, even though it's still a person, sort of, is St. Nick, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because St. Nicholas, jolly old St. Nick, is not
right.
Anatolian martyr. No. Anatolian saint. No. No, I was really surprised. I thought there'd be a lot more. Mm-hmm. We thought, hey, let's just see if, eponym, let's try the saint thing. We thought there'd be many, many.
A lot, mm-hmm. but there aren't.
Yeah. Okay, let's move along to Valentine's Day related words.
Yeah.
Let's start with the one that we all know and love, romantic.
Hmm.
Our question to you, Fletcher, this is going to be interesting, is we're going to give you a list, and one of these words or more are not related to the word romantic.
Sure.
Number one, novel. Number two, a military empire. Number three, a type of lettuce. Number four, capital letters. Number five, romp.
Which of those is it not related to in some way or another? Type of lettuce, right? Romaine. Yeah, it probably is. I want to say somehow it's not, though. Not the romaine lettuce. Somehow.
Romaine is related.
Okay,
It used to be called Romana lettuce.
Romana, so
it,
yeah.
You know, it is.
Yeah.
Okay, and novels. Now, is it related to novels, do you think, or not?
Sort of. I mean, we have romance novels.
Actually, we can go back further on this. Let's just first go through it. The words that it's not, or the not related, was romp.
Okay.
And capital letters.
Oh, both.
Novels.
Two. Okay.
A military empire. A military empire is called Rome.
Yes.
Which we know. A type of lettuce was called romaine, which we know. Uh-huh. And novels. Kathy, you want to go with Fletcher with the long history of.
Oh, right. We call them like a Roma. I mean, in French, isn't it like roman?
Roman,
yes.
See, then you've got Romana class.
Yeah.
You've got and it's in so many different languages. You've got the buildings Roman
uh-huh.
in German about the coming
yes.
of life. So Roman is a very widely used in different languages word for novels. So in English, the concept of romance initially was a story in verse, and it was about at night, or here it was more epic sort of thing. It was like you're, the concept of love, romance, love story, didn't really start as much until the 1660s. It extended, before then it was all your knightly deeds and blah de blah. Then it became romantic fiction, and now it's really much more romance novel as a specific thing. Didn't start being used until the 1800s. I mean, so you see the change in the meaning of word. Because now if you say romance, unless you're talking about something medieval or whatever, I don't think you're thinking knights. You're thinking, you really are thinking Liv.
Although, you know, I have a real problem with that. I read that and Kathy is completely correct. That's what the standard etymology is. But it was funny because the other day I was reading, I have an old like 1400s book and I was reading, it's in Latin. They're romances. They're like what Kathy said, knights and all that. But there's a fair amount of love in it. The one I was just reading was this guy is in prison and this king's daughter basically helps get him out and she falls in love with him as she gets out. And I kind of wonder if we're taking a little bit of a modern, like, you know, we did this first type thing and you guys are wrong.
I see what you're saying. I mean, but, you know? But I still think, well, but the focal point, I mean, it's like, if you look at Arthurian stuff, there's like, I mean, Lancelot and Guinevere, that's all love.
But that's what I sort of
think. That's not the focal. That, I mean, that's the tragedy part of it. Yeah, but then doesn't everything have love in it? I mean, except for the ones where you're not. I mean,
yeah.
You know what
well
I mean?
Said, yeah. We can say very confidently she is correct.
But you know what I mean? I think the difference to me is, though, that the modern romance concept is that's it. It's boy meets girl, or boy meets boy, or girl meets girl, or whomever.
Oh, no, I see what you're saying.
But I see
you
what you're
too.
Saying, but, too. Because, I mean, in honesty, you're right. There was a hell of a lot of love in those things.
And you're reading it for that reason, too. You're not just reading it to read about knights. You're reading it about it because you like some of the
story.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think there's a little bit of fuzz there. It's sort of fuzzy, I think, in that sense.
I think you're right.
Moving right along, we have the word love.
Well, in tennis...
We're going to ask you about tennis in a little bit.
It comes from the Old English, actually. This is not Latin. This comes from the Old English, spelled L-U-F-U, and pronounced... No, it's pronounced luva.
Luva is what I want to say.
The F is pronounced like a V. The first U is pronounced long. The second U is pronounced short. So it's luva, which is pretty close to love, I think, really.
Yeah.
Very much so.
But we have some questions about it. Kathy's first one was, when do people start falling in love?
Oh, like that phrase, falling in love?
I think we should say, though, that love, or lufu, I'm better with the PIE. I'm better on the steps, baby. As you have that as the feeling of love, blah, blah, blah. It's in the Middle English, but Old English had it weaker, liking and fondness. Beloved persons, like love as a noun for a person, my love, early 13th century. So let's do falling in love. As we're
falling in love, then we're looking at like the 16th century. I think.
Pretty close. 15th.
15th century.
That's 100 years.
Yeah, what is it?
Point.
I mean, exactly.
The 1500s was big, actually. The later, early 1500s, then you had be in love with, came from about the same time. Then you have make love in the sense of paying amorous attention. Like, you know, in the old books, they're always saying he was making love to her, like stroking her hair or saying, here is your glove, which is very loving. Was in the 1570s, and love affair, 1590s.
Wait a minute.
The 1500s was huge for love.
No, so I was right. I said 16th century, not the 1600s.
I know, but the first falling in love was early 15th century.
Was 1400s?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And then the 1500s started going a little wacky with love words.
Okay. That feels
this
right.
This one, love affair, really got me. I never thought of this until we did this. It comes from the French... love and then affaire, to make love. And I never thought of that.
Oh, wow.
Oh, to do something.
To do or to make. Affaire is to do or to make.
Yeah.
So it's to do, make love.
Love affaire.
Love affair is to make love, you know, which I never thought that was the origin. I never even thought of it, actually.
But it also means business proceeding. That is interesting, though, Russ. It really is.
Well, next one we have is make love in the sense of, and this one bothered me because as a kid, we'd read books And then with Geigel, we go, I made love to her. And I'd be like, what? You know, when did it become amorous rather than just, you know, paying attention to a spouse or to, you know, when did it become something kind of
carnal
with sexual
relations?
Meaning? Yeah, yeah. Carnal, well said, Kath. Carnal relations is the way to say it on air. This was really interesting to me.
Okay, so it seems like we would have had more coarse language earlier. When are we getting a little too proper? The Victorian era.
No.
Okay.
We should have given him, we actually had decades for you. Which
I know, but
I
thought it was better to have Hunter guess it. And I think I gave it away slightly because when I said I would read books and they would talk about making love, I wasn't reading books from like 1680. I was reading books from the 1930s.
He said Victorian era, though.
Yeah.
I know, but if by the 30s, if they're still writing make love and they don't mean it in an amorous sense.
Mm-hmm.
Or they have a film. I mean, I think I was watching some film the other day, and they met, he's making love to her. And, you know, this was for the 1930s. We're not seeing sex on, you know, with the Hays Code in the 1930s. The answer is around the 1950s.
Don't tell. I was going to say 20th century. Yeah, 1950s is when make love extended to basically mean sex.
Really? Wow.
Yep. Although, this is the thing that I was surprised, Ross. Because we have the D.H. Lawrence thing, and that wasn't 1950s.
No, but I think that was like that was D.H. Lawrence being, a lot of times when you're really, you know, you're a big writer or something like that, you do stuff way before everyone else does. But you're right.
Yeah.
D.H. Lawrence died, I mean, he died in 1930.
I don't know that he used the term as much as he used the concept more.
Yeah, but I think we should have maybe amended that so we can sound correct as we always are. When did it enter into general use?
Right.
Yeah, I think that's better.
Yeah, so if you're listening, ignore the first part and go general use.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Then we had, love life as a collective amorous activity, as they put it. That was 1919. Which surprised me because that's kind of, I would have thought that might have been earlier too.
Hmm.
I mean, we've got, you know, but no. But then I think people started talking about their own stuff more as time moved on.
Mm-hmm.
People were a little less taciturn, perhaps. It became, though, mainly popular in the 20th century. But I love this. In the 1350s, it was love longing. And they had love affair again, 1590s. But love life, the whole.
Yeah, all of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, when did love handles come in?
Middle age, I guess.
When did that start?
1960. I'm sorry. I'm going to go. I just gave it away again. Fletcher, did you hear me or not?
Yeah, yes. 1960s?
Yeah. Yeah. The first one, I think the first mention was 67, actually, I think.
Okay, next is another love word that we hear a fair amount, I think, and I can sing a song about it, but I won't, is puppy love. Yes,
yeah.
They call it. When was that first love used? 1950s, 1600s, 1800s, 1930s.
Ooh, puppy love. That really does not sound like it was before the 20th century, but I'll bet it was. Let's do the 18, whatever you said.
Your thought was correct.
It was the 1600s?
Yes!
Holy cow.
That was weird. That was so weird. 'Tis but a puppy lover that runs. Comedies and Tragedies from 1664. 'Tis but a puppy lover that runs.
Wow.
I would never have thought that. I thought it sounded like 1950s or something.
Oh,
it sounded like those really bad, you know, love songs.
Of course, yeah.
To me. That I'm not singing.
have you heard Calf Love?
Calf Love? No, I've never heard that before.
That was weird. I hadn't really, I think I vaguely had heard it. But that was from the 1800s. I made a calf marriage.
Calf
it's
love
just a
marriage.
Girl, love marriage. It's a girl's fancy, just a kind of cat love. Let it go by.
I have seen it in books, but I have never heard it used as a real word.
No, I instantly knew what it would be. I mean, you would know what it is. It obviously means what it sounds like it means to me or whatever. I wouldn't wonder what it means.
I don't know about you guys, though. Calf love, to me, I would have said 1600s.
Sure, yeah.
Puppy love, I would have said 1950s.
Yeah.
I would have, too.
Yeah.
Puppy love sounds really modern.
Uh-huh.
I agree
with
you.
It sounds extremely modern.
Yeah.
It sounds like those old you know, Valentine's with the little cartoons.
And, yeah, yeah, it does.
Okay. Now we've got to go courting.
Hmm.
This is interesting.
Seems such an old-fashioned word.
And it is. But is it related to a closed yard, like a courtyard?
Courtyard. Mm-hmm.
Related to seeking favor. I'm trying to court favor. Or related to a king's court, queen's court, a royal court.
Mm-hmm. Asking for an audience.
Don't overthink this one.
Yeah, okay.
And this could be a trick question,
all right,
too.
So. All right.
Oh, yes. I forgot to say
this.
That.
Yeah. Then how about just the courtyard? It's like, I'm going to come into your courtyard and I'm going to try to talk to you.
You're sort of close, but it's all of them.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
And it does come from courtyard. And the courtyard in early times would be, you know, only the king had the bucks to make, or the whatever it is, to make a courtyard. So it would be, you basically go to the king's courtyard and seek favor. And then from there, it sort of in the 1500s, guess what? Guess the time. It came to mean wooing or soliciting affection.
Because it was like, it was a parallel to the king's court when you're trying to get his favor to not be killed or to get the land or to get the peerage.
Well, thank you, Catherine, for all the things that we can court the king for. Let's give Fletcher a quiz on that one. And then finally, we have what Fletcher asked for. Kath, you want to?
Okay, tennis courts.
Oh, yeah.
And love. Why is it love? The zero score.
Yeah. I think we've talked about various possibilities here. It seems like maybe nobody's 100% sure. The one that is probably, I don't know, the most fun is the one where it's related to l'œuf, the egg. The French word for egg, which is, you know, a goose egg is a zero, right? I can't remember the other possibilities, though.
The other possibility that's like one of the main competitors is you're playing for love, not money.
Oh, yeah.
And that was in the 1670s. No stakes. So it doesn't, you know, it's no. So then it goes from no stakes to no score.
Yeah.
That one, though, is sloppy, I think.
I agree.
Because you've got to go from no stakes to no score.
Oh, I don't think that's true either.
Yeah.
Let's do infatuation. That's an easy one. Infatuation. Okay, what's your guess as to the origin of the... What is this related to, actually, Fletcher? Can you think of... there's a word that has that comes from this... We use it in English.
Fatuous?
Yes.
Yes! I didn't get that immediately. Very good.
That's very good. You're being... You're a fool in love. Exactly.
Oh, yeah,
that's
okay.
That's exactly the origin.
Cool.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
I like that one. And,
yeah.
And like Kathy, I didn't get that either. I mean, I know the word, I know fatuous, I know infatuation, but I did not get the connection.
Yeah, that's kind of neat.
That was a little later than the 1500s, whereas that was the mid-1600s.
Oh, good. Okay. Okay, this is a word that's a new word, and I'm not wild about it personally. I don't know what Kath thinks on this one. The word is limerence.
I detest it.
Limerence?
Yes.
Yes. L-I-M-E-R-E-N-C-E. It's like you've got a crush on someone. You're intense. Oh, we talked about infatuation. You're so infatuated with this person, but you're not sure how they feel about you. But you're busy going, ooh.
I've never heard this before.
No, it's a fairly recent term. It was coined by a psychologist, Dorothy Tenov, in the 1960s when she interviewed people on the topic of love. And she put this in her book, and apparently it's a fairly general psychological term. And I think Kathy said it as I do, I don't really feel it's a necessary word. She says she first used the term amorance and then changed it to limerence.
I love it, though. She was asked, what's the etymology? She said, no roots whatsoever.
She just made it up.
It looks nice.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it looks nice. She said it works well in French. Take it from me. It has no etymology whatsoever.
Weird. Can I add something on that one? That bothers me a little bit. Because in French, L-I-M-E-R, Fletcher, do you know the word?
No, that one I don't know. I don't know that.
Okay, that means to file. Or to like kind of go back and forth with something.
Oh.
And I think someone once said it could have like a, you know, sexual slang to it. I don't know. I had never heard it in that sense. But it does have like a meaning in French. And then you add the A-N-C, you know, the E-N-C-A-N-C-E. So it looks like violence to me, which, you know, it's sort of a weird word. But I don't really think it's that necessary. I think it's like a crush or something like that.
Yeah, that's what, yeah.
It's also,
exactly.
I just want to say limmer is also an archaic term for a leash hound or bloodhound.
Oh, well, yes. I've changed my mind.
There we go. And it can also be a limer, someone who puts lime on things.
One who limes, yes.
Yeah, I my problem is it's really widely used now. I mean, if you look online, there are ton of articles about this. It's become
really
like a buzzword, if you
really
will. Yeah, and I would say only in the last couple of years. I know she coined it in the 1970 something.
Uh-huh. I thought it was the 60s here, but whatever.
Go, maybe the, okay, yeah. I'm just saying, that interview that I, oh yeah, it was the 60s.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you did it in the 1600s, Kathy, or 1500s.
1590. But you're really seeing it a lot now. It's become like one of those like zeitgeisty words. I agree with you, Rose. I don't think it's needed. I mean, They say the state is characterized by intrusive thoughts and idealization of the loved ones, also called crystallization, typically with a desire for reciprocation to form a relationship. That's like you go, ooh, I like this person and I hope they like me back, isn't it?
I think, and that's a crush, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The one thing I do think, though, I wonder about if it partly has caught on now because, and we've, Kath and I both have noticed that, people like falling in love with celebrities who never will come back, you know, to, they don't even know who you are.
We and go maybe, back to the word of the year that someone picked.
Remember? Parasocial.
Yeah. So, yeah, parasocial. So maybe it's like really linked to parasocial behavior. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, it's different than crush in a way. Yeah. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
I think it's because everybody likes categorizing now. Everybody's in this like sort of psychological ADHD spectrum, yeah. You know, this and that. I think it's that. I think I think it's because we go back to my pet peeve of sounding fancy. This is science fancy. Mm-hmm. It sounds a lot more science fancy to say it's limerence other than I have a real crush on Bobby over there. You know?
You're right. I think that's a really good way to think of it.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. Our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. Carly Cooper is also our video editor. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org. or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also record a voice memo of yourself asking your question. You might get your voice heard on air. Or you can download the KMUW app and press the Talk to Us button. You can find Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Maybe you already know about naked short selling. Maybe you've personally shorted stocks yourself. But do you know about the time short sellers ruined a Super Bowl, basically?
For me, I was a little late, but red flags went up like, what is going on? This is really scary.
At Planet Money, we get the story behind the money to explain how money works. Listen on the NPR app or wherever you get your podcasts.